Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, John Beck, and today our special guest is Ellen Ehrgood. She's the author of South of Superior, a Michigan novel set in the Upper Peninsula, and two other books, Prairie Rivers, I think.
Prairie Evers.
Prairie Evers, thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
And a third one is coming out, and we'll talk about that. How's it going today, Ellen?
It's going well. I'm happy to be here talking with you.
Great. I'm happy to have you here. Now, I'm just looking at your bio on your website, and you're not somebody with a literary background, per se. I don't know what that means. I guess if you read, you're literary. But,
right.
I mean, you know, somebody like with an MFA or a PhD in writing, you just write from life and life's experiences in South of Superior. What motivated you to finally take up writing?
Honestly, I knew that I wanted to be a writer from the time that I was 10 years old.
Really?
Both of my parents were voracious readers. Our house was full of books. We didn't even have a television until I was about 12. And I'm only 48, so that's kind of unusual for my age group. I grew up on a small farm. We were outdoors a lot. I loved that. We read a lot. I loved that. And then in fourth grade, my teacher, Mrs. Nora Keebler, assigned a lot of creative writing, and it just hit me, literally, like a very cliche bolt out of the blue.
Uh-huh.
When I made the connection between all those stories that I love to read, when she had us start writing our own stories, I realized somebody, some person, some individual wrote them. They weren't just these magical items. They were created, and I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to create those stories. So I knew from the time I was very young that desire was very serious. It never went away. I did not major in creative writing or English at the university, partly because I thought it would be impractical. I'm super practical, as well as a wild dreamer, and kind of both, like so many people are a couple things. And I ended up getting a Bachelor's of Science in Natural Resources, which was a fantastic degree. I loved the program. And I do have a very scientific bent to my personality as well as a literary bent. So I've never regretted that. And I am, as you say, I'm a reader. Anybody that reads is literary in a way. And I did write very much from life and my own experiences in South of Superior. Not that it's autobiographical, it really isn't, but I wanted to share the UP. I wanted to share the spirit of the UP and to try to share kind of what might be a fading way of life that I think is very special. So I had almost, in a way, an anthropological mission, in a way, a feeling about it to try to include as much as I could think of and see, remember, and dig up without it being forced or false, that I wanted to include as much as many artifacts of this incredible place, a place I really love,
uh-huh,
and have lived for a long time, as I could.
Yeah, your background is interesting. I wasn't aware that you had a science degree, and I think you achieved, having read South of Superior myself, I think you achieved what you set out to do, because I went to school at Northern here back in the 80s, and I moved back up here recently. I've been up here, and it really is a unique place, and I think you nailed it. There's a line here. I'm looking at South Superior now on my Kindle. It's 61% into the book. I don't know exactly what chapter it is, but Madeline is talking to Mary, the character Mary, who's
Mary's father.
Right, yeah. And she's, anyhow, I'll just read this paragraph and see what your reaction or how you want to embellish on that. Madeline nodded. Maybe she understood. Maybe she didn't. It was hard to explain. Mary gave a piercing whistle that brought Jack running and put a hand on his head. Much as she groused to John Fitzgerald, the truth was that a dog was a good thing to have. A dog steadied you. Just the smell of a dog, the feel of his fur, the way a dog lived, upfront and simple. She stared at her feet, and then she said, "What you have to do here, you have to accept." It's in italics, accept. "You have to dash lay down before the way things are." I think you nailed it. I mean,
thank you, John. That paragraph, you nailed it, because that paragraph in many ways is exactly what the whole book is about.
Oh, thank you.
I wrote the whole book in a way around that paragraph. So it's really gratifying to me as a writer when a reader completely hones in on what you were thinking the whole time.
Well, I think you placed it perfectly, because, you know, she's the main character, Madeline Stone, goes through, you know, she's already thick into things. And all of life's little troubles and big troubles and the unique situation that she's in. But I think, you know, living in Upper Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula as we do, you just have to succumb to nature. And you have to succumb to nature as a force, because it shapes the way you live your life. And I think you brought that out very well in the novel. And people who don't understand that you just can't understand it. I mean, you've spelled it out for them, and if they still don't get it, then maybe they need to come up here and spend a winter at least. You know, don't come for the summer. I see people come and breeze through in the summer, and, you know, and then there's a snow killers. But, you know, spend a whole year here, and you really, you know, that line, I think, just sums it up, because you're just things that you can't do when the weather doesn't cooperate.
Yeah, the weather is a huge, I mean, winter is a whole different animal, and I'm fortunate. I love winter.
Uh-huh.
I love the UP overall, summer, fall, winter, and even spring, that horrible, horrible mud season when it's so bleak, and it's a real risk litter, and you see why so many grim things. It just can get the best of you quite easily, frankly.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with spring, but that doesn't mean I don't love it. But the weather is, the way the weather shapes your life is just, it's hard to explain to people. I can't do that. The weather says I can't. But also the economy,
right,
which is another part of the weather in some ways, you know.
Yeah.
Things just, they are the way they are here. And if you want them your way, you're probably not going to be very happy here.
Right.
But if you'll accept that it's not going to be your way, then I just think it's a fantastic place. And it's a good, I think it's a good life lesson, not to sound too, I don't mean that to sound dull or anything, but a lot of people have forgotten that they can't always have their way, and that leads to
right
some limited thinking, I think.
Yeah,
in the world.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah, we're a point and click generation, and if we can't get it prime delivery in 2 days, then, you know, forget it. But we haven't really, I mean, I just hit on that one line, but can you go ahead and give a brief summary? You said it wasn't autobiographical in nature, but, you know, for people who are not familiar, who haven't listened with the book, can you just give in your own words what South of Superior is about? And I didn't realize it, and I don't know if you intended this or not, but as we were emailing, I started abbreviating, and it came up SOS, and I just thought, that's pretty cool.
I honestly, the book when I wrote it was called Stone Lake.
Okay.
And it was in the book, I bring a character from Chicago up to the UP.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to bring an outsider so that I would have a character who was seeing everything new with an outsider's eyes. Because once you live here for a while, you don't see things that way anymore.
Right.
And I've lived here now for 24 years. So it's hard for me. I needed that character who wasn't from here to help me remember what's new and different.
Uh-huh.
what might be a struggle, what might be fantastic, you know.
Interesting.
And also for the drama of the book. So I bring a character who has a family history in the UP, but her family's estranged and she's never been here. I bring her to help two elderly sisters so that one of them can not have to go to a nursing home. And through that connection, she meets a lot of people in the community and gets embroiled in, you know, the dramas of life. Before that main character, Madeline Stone from Chicago, the story is very much about letting go of her past grievances against her estranged family and accepting the way things are and taking some risks for her own life because she'd like to be a painter. And so is she going to pursue that or not are kind of the questions. But a whole heck of a lot of other stuff happens throughout the course of the book.
Yeah. Yep.
And it really is. The book is about acceptance. It's about acceptance of the way things are. But it's about community, too. And it's about the way the big lake and the landscape shape people's attitudes and personalities here.
Yes.
And it's about a lot of different kinds of love. The two elderly sisters that she helps, Madeline, their names are Gladys and Arbutus. And to me, they're the heart of the book. They're what the book is really centered on. These two very elderly women who've lived in this tiny little village on the shore of Lake Superior for their entire lives. And they kept me going. I worked on this book for a long time, 7 years between the time I started it and when it was published. And my day job as well, which is quite demanding. My husband and I run a restaurant together. But those two sisters, who are not any particular person that I've ever known, but they are a collection of the spirits of the kind of very elderly people that I've had the honor and the good fortune to know here. And I thought if I could share somewhat of their stoicism and their humor and their down-to-earthness and their ruggedness, I would have done something worth doing. And there were any number of times when it was frustrating and not very rewarding and not very fun at all, and I would have preferred to give up.
Yeah.
But then I would think of Gladys and Arbutus, the fictional characters, and I would think of the people who inspired them, and I'd think, no, for them I will keep going. And I'm really glad I did.
That's interesting how you actually, you know, I've talked to other writers, and as a writer myself, you really do develop a fictional relationship with fictional characters.
You do, yeah. You really do.
Yeah. And speaking of Arbutus and Gladys, I've got another line here going back. I don't know exactly where this is, 34% into the novel. Okay, the homework was in the way. What was the way? She left it too long. Gladys heard Madeline's determination when said they'd have to help
Emil.
Oh, Gladys, she said, what a foolish old woman you are. There's nothing to fear in Madeline Stone. She's not Jackie. Jackie, of course, was her grandmother. Is that right?
Jackie was Madeline's birth mother.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, yeah, it's been about a month since I read this. Okay, what was the way? Now I'm quoting from the book. She left it too long. It would only get more awkward every minute. She should have done it right off, like Arbutus said, but she hadn't known Madeline then. She'd wanted to protect Walter in case Madeline turned out to be just like her mother. Okay, so we've got the deceased, troubled mother who couldn't take care of her child, and then Madeline's coming into conflict or uncovering more of this, but still, I mean, some things are never completely revealed, are they? Because here Gladys, who has the privilege of having hindsight, is still unsure of what the outcome will be in spite of all of her knowledge of family history and life wisdom.
True. And I think that's the way life is. You just never know.
Yeah, yeah.
You never have all the answers, and it doesn't matter how old you get. You still don't have all the answers.
Yeah, yeah. And
I think you just stay human right along till the end for all of the good and bad that does you.
Yeah.
You know?
that's I can't get anything out of that. I mean, there's no argument for me. And I like what you said earlier about, you know, the stoicism and the rugged determination of the people, because A lot of people really don't make it. We have, as you know, a lot of problems with unemployment and alcoholism and suicide, and it's a tough road to walk.
It is. It really is. And I don't. It's hard to know how to evoke the UP. I don't know leave any of that out. The reality, as much as the beauty and the humor there is. There's just so much suicide and substance abuse. It's a rough place, and a lot of people don't make it. And I understand why not.
Yeah, but it's beautiful, and I think you did a good job of balancing out the beauty and the harshness of the environment. Here's another line. Speaking of the humor, I mean, you've got to have a sense of humor if you want to survive up here. Emil doesn't have a pot to pee in, and come next month, he won't have a window to throw it out either.
Yes.
There's a good example of your Finnish pragmatic humor there, I think.
Yeah, and that's I don't know if it's Emo or Gladys who says at one point that Emo's been broke flat as piss on a platter his whole life, and that is something that an older gentleman said in the restaurant. Someone born and raised a retired commercial fisherman said about himself, and I told him, as soon as he said it, I said, just so you know, that's going in a book somewhere, sometime. I had never heard that one before, but it was really, there it was.
Every artist is a cannibal, every poet is a thief. Yeah.
And he was tickled, he was pleased.
Good.
But I couldn't have made that one up.
Yeah, so you've got another book out, which is a children's book, is that right?
Yeah, my second novel is called Prairie Evers, uh-huh. And it's what they call a middle grade novel, so it's aimed at the 8 to 12-year-old range.
Okay.
Although, really, honestly, I'd say 8 to 108. When I wrote Prairie, I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm writing a book for adults, or oh, I'm writing a book for kids.
Uh-huh.
Prairie was a super magical writing experience for me, really the only one of this nature I've ever had, where she appeared as a voice in my head, and Prairie is the narrator's name, Prairie Evers, so the title of the book is the name of the narrator, and she had a story to tell, and she had a very unique and very strong voice, and I just tried to follow her voice, and it was the easiest and most joyful writing I've ever done, and that, I guess it was a gift. I don't know if I'll ever get another writing gift like that, but it was fantastic. And I actually wrote Prairie Evers long before I ever wrote South of Superior.
Really?
But it was after South of Superior had been accepted and was in the process of being turned in, published, that my agent thought possibly Penguin's youth division would like to take a look at it.
Yeah.
And so they did, and it's been a fantastic experience there too. I love Prairie, and a lot of my adult readers who read South of Superior most of them emailed me to say, wow, I didn't realize that I could love a book for kids, but I really loved it.
Wonderful.
But it's got a crossover appeal, and Prairie is just she's a character.
Yeah, 8 to 108. Sure, there's a lot of times, I admit it, I watch family Walt Disney movies. I mean, there's a wholesomeness, and that's what I found in your writing too that I find refreshing. I hope other readers did too, as well as revealing, as we've talked about. So, Ellen, where can people find out, get your book, get a copy of South Superior, Prairie Evers, and Education of Ivy Blake, which will be coming out.
In June.
Okay, yeah, great. That's not too far off. Why don't you tell
us
about your website and where you'd like them to go to get a book, get a copy?
Well, I do have a website. It's ellenairgood.com, so there's more information about me and the books on there. The books, especially South Superior, in Michigan are pretty widely available at your brick-and-mortar bookstores or can be gotten by them pretty easily. If you have a favorite brick-and-mortar store, please go buy books there, any books. It's a hard time in the world for bookstores.
Yeah.
And the books can be gotten online at any of your typical online
Amazon,
sources.
Kindle, yeah. iTunes.
As well. So they're pretty easy to get, really.
Okay.
I'm super fortunate that I have Penguin as my publisher, and they're an enormous publisher, and the books were widely distributed.
That's great.
So,
it's been great talking to you. Thanks for chatting. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the talk. Thanks for asking me.
You're very welcome, man. We've been talking to Ellen Ehrgood, author of South of Superior, Hurry Evers, and forthcoming novel in June, The Education of Ivy Blake. Check out her website and her blog, EllenEhrgood.com. This has been WritersAlive.com. Your host, John Bick, signing out.